The House and Senate have both passed bills to shore up the Veterans Affairs Department. The final bill would give veterans more opportunities to seek care outside of VA hospitals while beefing up the VA's own medical staff. The Congressional Budget Office has scored the VA bill and estimates the expense of the additional care would be about $50 billion. Yevgeny Feyman is a fellow at the Manhattan Institute specializing in health policy issues. He joins us now with some analysis. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So what do we know about this $50 billion? How does it break down? What will it pay for inside and outside of the VA?
So it's kind of difficult to say right now. This $50 billion estimate comes with a huge asterisk. The CBO doesn't really know how to score this in an easy-to-understand, accurate way just because they've never had to do this before. So, you know, the $50 billion would go to providing health care very generally, but we don't know exactly what that would entail. We don't know really how veterans would respond to this. So it could end up being $50 billion. It could end up being $20 billion or even $5
billion. Just explain to me a little bit of background here. Why is this new to the CBO? What about this bill special?
So the big thing here is the question about how veterans who don't use the VA would respond. There's about 13 million veterans that the CBO estimates that would be eligible that currently don't use the VA, and they say that about 8 million of those would go and start using the VA because of this. That's really a wild guess. It's a hypothesis. It's an educated estimate, but I'm not sure the CBO has any way to ensure that that's completely accurate, that they're not basing it on any programs that have existed before. So this is completely new, this new territory.
So the bill is then aimed at more than just the 60, 70,000 people who are unable to get an appointment at the VA. It would allow, I thought it was written so that those that were waiting a long time would be the only ones to be able to go to outside providers and have the VA pay for it. Is it more than that?
In theory, yes. In theory, that's exactly what's supposed to happen. But the idea is that in order to accommodate an influx of new patients, which the CBO expects there would be, first of all, the VA would have to beef up their own facilities. They'd have to expand capacity, hire new people. But even doing that, the CBO estimates would take a few years. So as they're doing that, the VA would have to contract with private providers and have them provide the care.
So, you know, in a lot of businesses, you think, well, having more customers is great. That's what we really want. I guess in the VA, in some respects, you can see why it doesn't want that. But when you're talking about veterans and the quality of care, should more veterans actually be seeking care from a VA as opposed to from hospitals more used to dealing with civilians?
You know, that's a difficult question. I think that as we talk about the VA, we have to be very careful not to throw out the baby with the bathwater. There are lots and lots of studies showing that the VA outperforms private sector hospitals on a variety of metrics. So they're clearly still doing something good. I think that, you know, this waiting list debacle is terrible. It shows that there's some major problem inherent in the administration of the VA. But you know, when veterans choose to go to the VA, oftentimes they're choosing that for very rational reasons. Maybe a doctor they really like that does really good work works at the VA. Maybe they've had a good experience at the VA before. Maybe the VA has done a great job helping them get the right meds that they need. So, you know, when veterans make this decision, they're not stupid. They're not making irrational choices. They're saying, you know, this is a good place to go.
But I think that is a good point to make because there is at least some perception that vets go to the VA because they can't afford care elsewhere or for some other reason. But if they had means, they would choose to go elsewhere. But in fact, you're saying the contrary. They choose to go to the VA as opposed to seek help elsewhere.
Actually says in this latest report is that the VA only provides about 30% of the care for veterans. So the majority of them do have some other source of care. I think previous CBO reports have said that somewhere around 70% have either employer-sponsored coverage, Medicare, or some kind of supplemental insurance that they do use to get care elsewhere. Many people who go to the VA have Medicare Advantage. They might have a Medicare drug plan, a Medicare supplemental insurance plan. So they can often get care elsewhere. So if they can do that, that if they have an option, but they're still choosing to go to the VA, you know, there's probably more than just cost considerations.
We're speaking with Yevhene Feyman. He's a fellow at the Manhattan Institute. I guess the essential question really here is, without the money to hire all these new doctors and nurses, allegedly, that the VA is allowed to hire under some of these under this bill, is the capacity of the VA as it stands now enough to handle those people that couldn't get an appointment? In other words, is it an appointment problem or a capacity problem? And that we haven't really heard a satisfactory answer to that.
I don't really know if it's necessarily a capacity problem. I think that, you know, these waiting lists are more a function of the administration. So the way that the VA has been administered, they've had certain metrics to meet, and they certainly should have those metrics. But the administration of the VA was more concerned with meeting the metrics rather than providing care. That's why we had these waiting lists. The capacity might be there, but it might not be there to meet those specific metrics. So, you know, these are very nuanced questions that have to be asked in context. Could the VA use more workers? Probably. If you're trying to clamp down on the VA, so if you're trying to fit more people into a shorter schedule, that means that the quality of care is going to fall. So if you want to expand that, you've got to spend money. You've got to let the VA contract out. So this is going to be an ongoing thing to keep track of. The VA is very secretive about a lot of the metrics. They don't release all the data. They release some of it in this annual report card, but there's still a lot of information that's not available. One great thing this bill would do is require them to start making that information much more public.
So, Yevhene, I want to pose a hypothetical. If the VA were to come to you and say, this bill has just been passed into law with the money attached, now tell us how we spend it so that we can treat all the veterans that we have left off of waiting lists, or that have seen, you know, get people who have waited too long to see their doctors more efficiently. How do we solve the problems with this money? Where would you put the money?
So, as an incrementalist, I'd say go ahead, hire new people. If you can't find the right people to hire, contract out. That being said, I think this bill does less than a real reform bill could do. I think when it comes down to it, putting a similar amount of money, maybe even more money, into providing vouchers for veterans where it would let them choose between going to the VA or getting private coverage would probably be a better option. I haven't seen any bills that do that. That's going to be opposed by veterans groups, so politically that's probably not realistic. It's clearly about expanding capacity. It's also about hiring the right people. We don't know very much about what the political climate within the VA is like, who gets hired, you know, whether these are legacy hires, whether it's a meritocratic system, or if people are getting hired because they know someone on the inside. So I would definitely want to see more of a reform of the administration coupled with this bill. So if you have to spend some of this money to clean out some of the some of the bad people, I think that's a great way to spend some of the money.
Yevhene Feyman is a fellow at the Manhattan Institute, and thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.